Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Nun Gimel. We will begin on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. Rapapa Iasikle Lebrei. Rapapa was marrying off a son. He was doing a shidduch with Bei Abasura. Rapapa's son was marrying Abasura's daughter. And it's interesting to note that Rapapa himself was a son-in-law of Abasura. But as the Rishonim explain, if Rapapa was the son-in-law of Abasura, obviously this boy who was getting engaged now to Abasura's daughter couldn't have been the son of Abasura's daughter, because you can't marry your mother's sister. So it must be that Rapapa had this son from a different wife, and he and his son would be son-in-laws at the same home, at Abasura. In fact, there's an interesting Nagid of Yehuda. The Nagid of Yehuda says, the Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, we know about, that says various different inyonim about shidduchim, what type of marriages not to make. And one of the things that Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chosid says is that a father and a son should not be son-in-laws in the same home. So the Nagid of Yehuda uses this gemara as a proof. There's a big debate amongst the Paiskim. Does everybody have to follow what it says in Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chosid? And the Nagid of Yehuda uses this as a proof that only people who are descendants of Rabbi Yehuda Chosid have to follow it, and that's why Rapapa didn't have to follow it. Others that defended Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chosid say that Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chosid was written after the time of the Gemara. So in the time of the Gemara, it wasn't a problem. Later on, Rabbi Yehuda Chosid said it's a problem because he decided, or obviously not just an independent decision, that we should avoid these kind of shidduchim. So Rapapa is coming to the city where Abasura lives to conduct a shidduch between his son and his daughter. Azul Michtalei Ksubasa. So we're going to negotiate a ksuba. They're going to negotiate a nadin. Shama Yehuda b'mereima. Yehuda b'mereima hears that Rapapa is coming to town. Nofik Osik Ischazilei. So he went to greet Rapapa. Kimatel Pischa. When they came to the entrance of Abasura's home, have a kamiftim in a. So Yehuda ben Ramah said, I have nothing to do going in here. This is between the two mechatanim. Amle ne'ma b'hadoi. Come along. Chazed alay avanichalei. So Rapapa saw that Yehuda ben Ramah was reluctant to join him. Amle my datach. Why are you trying to avoid being present for this meeting? Shunda amle shmuel Rav Yehuda. Because there's a shmuel taught Rav Yehuda. Tell him Shinana. We know Rabbi Yehuda is called Shinana either because he was sharp or he had large teeth. Like the heavy bavure echsanta afil mibra bishal bra tava. One should not participate in seeing how a Yerusha, how an inheritance goes from one son to another son. Somebody wants to give one son more inheritance because he thinks that son is going to have a better family and he would like to see his money in that family. But we really don't know what the future has in store. And sometimes the other son, who we think is less, is really going to end up more. So what Rapapa is saying to Yehuda, a daughter, we know, is not a Yairish, Midaraisa. Here, Abasura is going to be giving a large dowry to his daughter, which will deprive the Yarshim, the real Yarshim, the sons, of their inheritance. And you don't want to be part of that. And that's why you don't want to participate in this conversation. The Koshken, he says, you don't want to participate. Mibra Librata, when in money goes from the son to the daughter because it belongs to the sons. And we're going to talk about this halacha a little more in a few moments. So he says, Hai Nami, what I'm doing is not incorrect, because Takanta de Rabbanan he, as we learned in the previous year, Dom Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Shim Ben Yochai, that a father has to do everything to make sure that his daughter could get married. So me asking, I, Rapapa, asking Abasura to give a dowry for his daughter is not contrary to what the Torah wants. Amale, so Yehuda ben Ramah says, you're right. A father has to give a daughter a dowry. However, midate, hani mil midate, he has to do it of his own consent. Lashuye nami, but he has no right to force him. Amale, oto, Mikamina loch, the Ova Ashe, did I ask you to come and force Abu Surah to give what he doesn't want to give? Or of Loitasi Kamina? I ask you just to sit there and not force him to do what he doesn't want to do. Amrei, Ma'ali Dedei Hanasiye. My just being there will create pressure. Achyeva all. But Rapapa asked Rehud Ben Mareima to come, and he agreed and he came up. Ishtik, the Yosef. And he's sitting there quietly. Sover Ihu. So Abu Surah is sitting there, negotiating with his Mechutin, Rapapa, and Yehud Ben Mareima is sitting quietly. So Abu Surah starts thinking, Hahu Mirsach Rasach. You know why Yehud Ben Mareima is quiet? He's obviously angry at me, because I'm not giving enough. Kasle Koma Dehavale. So Abu Surah felt this pressure, and everything he had, he wrote away for the dowry. L'soif amalei. And then, when he has nothing left, he tells Yehuda ben Reima, Hashta loy mishtai, you're still not talking to me? Chai demar, I could swear, loy shavik midil nafshai, I have nothing left. What do you want from me? Amalei, imi noy didi, if you ask me my opinion, I feel a high nami de ksafta, the amount that you gave, Lenichli, I never expected you to give that much. You shouldn't have given so much. So now that Abu Surah hears this, he says, you know what? I'll renegotiate. I'll retract. Amalei, that you can't do. Shavi anafshech hadranach, to change your mind after you committed, that's too late. Loi kamina, that I'm not suggesting. I didn't ask you to give that much, and I would have never recommended or advised you to give this much. But once you gave it, once you promise, you have to keep your word. The Mefarshim asked, we learned in the previous year, we discussed this earlier in the parak, that the Gemara keeps on saying that typically the dowry is Isur Nechasim, 10%. And there's a Machlokes Rishonim how to understand that 10%. Rashi understands that 10% is advice. So sometimes people have to give more than the 10%. But other Rishonim say that 10% is a maximum. So how are we going to explain our Gemara that he gave more than 10%? So some explain that even though you're not supposed to give more than 10%, if you do, and you gave your word, you have to keep your word. Another teretz that I saw the Mefarshim give is there's a difference if the father is alive or not alive. All the Gemaras that we discussed that's 10% is that the father is unfortunately no longer alive. So we have to estimate what would the father give. So the number is 10%, that's typical what a father would give for a dowry. But if the father is alive and he's voluntarily offering more, there is no rule that it's limited to 10%. So as we mentioned at the top of the Yomit, this very interesting halacha, that one should not be part of disinheriting or changing the laws of Yerusha. Very fascinating subject in the Paiskim. Some Paiskim say that obviously if there are a number of brothers, and there are some brothers that, let's say, are wealthier than others, and they are agreeable that the less wealthy brother should get a larger share, obviously there's no issue because they're in agreement. There's some paiskim that suggest that this halacha only applies to real estate, but not to metalkin. Most paiskim don't agree with that. There are some paiskim that suggest that it's only, we know the halacha is, as we've been learning, we'll continue to learn, that if one has sons, his sons are his yarshim. Let's say somebody doesn't have sons. He only has daughters. Or let's say he doesn't even have children, Nebuch. He only has brothers or uncles who are getting his inheritance. That the Gemara speaks about making sure that a Yerusha should not go from one son to another son. But if one's sons are anyway not his Yarshim, he doesn't have sons, this halacha doesn't apply. Others say that the halachas of Yerusha, what the Gemara here means, is that the halachas of Yerusha should always be followed, and no matter who the Yarshim are. And in fact, there's an interesting Ramah who says, do you want to know what the best thing to do with your money after you leave the world? The best thing to do with your money is to do what the Torah tells you to do with the money, to follow the Hilchos Yerusha. Although, the halacha is that if one did not follow Hilchos Yerusha, what he did is acceptable. There's a tshuva in Reb Akiva Eigub where somebody, thinking that he was doing the right thing, donated all of his money to be used to build a shul after he leaves the world. And then he became aware that what he did was incorrect. You have to follow Hilchos Yerusha. Says Rabbi Kivega, if he did it, it's valid. But there are in the Paiskim a number of exceptions to the rule mentioned that are actually very relevant to Psukim in the Torah. One exception to the rule is that if there are sons, Ramosha discusses this, and many Paiskim discuss this, Teichem discusses this, if there are sons, and there is a son who is not acting properly, not that he's not as much of a tzaddik as his brother, he's really not acting as a religious Jew. Ramosha says he doesn't send his children to yeshiva, as an example. There, giving the money only to the sons who act properly is fine. And there's actually a raya to this concept, midaraisa. We know that when Eliezer was sent by Avraham to find a wife for Yitzchak, so the pasuk says, v'chol tov adonav adonav biyodo. Says Rashi, what's pshat? That Avraham Avinu gave Eliezer a document that everything he owns, Yitzchak is receiving. Asks the Mefarshim, the Dasakenim asked the question, we just learned, you're not supposed to change Hilchas Yerusha. There was another son, actually an older son, Yishmael. So how's Avram disinheriting Yishmael? So some suggest they were all Gerim, and Gershon is Gaike Kotten Shnei Adamim, they're not really related. It's difficult to understand that, because Avram was a Ger, Yitzchak and Yishmael weren't Gerim. However, according to this Teretz, it's very Gishmak. Avram knew that nothing's good going to come out from Yishmael, and therefore, he didn't give him a share in his inheritance. And the Chasam Sofer says that that's pshat in the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'yera l'Avraham al oidos benoi." Avram was upset about his son. Says the Chasam Sofer, what was he upset about? He was upset that he was giving all of his inheritance to Yitzchak and none to Yishmael. So what does the pasuk say? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram, "Kol ashtayim alecha sara shma b'koila." What does Rashi say there? Because Sarah is greater in the Nevi'ah than you are. So what does that have to do with Avram being upset? Because Sarah was a Nevi'ah. She saw what the future of Yishmael is. And she saw that the future, which we know what the future is, of Yishmael. So that's why I listen when she tells you that he doesn't deserve a share of the inheritance. Another heter that they give is that if the money is given while the father is alive, he gives one child more of a gift than he gives to another child, that's also mutter. And again, we have a raya from Avram Avinu. The pasuk says, "Ulbnei ha-pilakshin nosen Avram matonis." That Avram Avinu gave the sons of the pilakshin gifts. So the Mefarshim ask, again, he obviously is taking away from Yitzchak Shir. How can he do it? So Rashi says, what does matonis mean? He gave them shame tumma. So Mefarshim explain, what is Rashi telling us? Rashi was bothered, how could Avram give the Pnei Palakshim from the Yerusha and deprive Yitzchak? That's why Rashi says he didn't give him money. He gave him a shame. It's not money. But other Mefarshim say, when did he give the Pnei Palakshim these gifts? When he was still alive. Hilchas Yerusha are only after one is no longer here. So that's why while he's still alive, he could give them, and that's not considered depriving. A third heter that I saw is some paiskim suggest that if one leaves over a inheritance and he takes a portion of that inheritance and he says it should be divided according to the way the halacha tells us to divide it, and then the rest of the money he wants to divide as he sees fit, that is not necessarily considered nullifying Hilchos Yerusha because he left a share of the money that the Hilchos Yerusha should be able to apply to. One more interesting shaila that I saw, fascinating Gemara. The Gemara at the end, the last words of the Gemara, we said that Yehuda ben Merema told Abba Sura, once you committed, you have to keep your word. So I saw an interesting shaila. Somebody was approached for a tzedakah course. And when the person who approached him for the course asked him, he told him, I'm coming to you as an emissary of the Gol Hador. The biggest Rav, the biggest Rosh Hashiva, the biggest Rebbe, asked me to approach you to pledge to this course. Hearing that he was coming as an emissary, as a messenger of that person, he made a very substantial pledge. And then he finds out that it's not true. Nobody ever sent him. So what's the halacha? He committed. but it was under false pretenses, and it's for tzedakah. Does he have to keep his word or not? So there's a very interesting tshuva in the Imri Yosha from Ramea Arik. He discusses a shaila where a community was collecting money for a Sefer Torah. And the Sefer Torah was supposed to cost 150 gilden, whatever the currency was. The Gaboyim made a calculation, and they saw that they had 80,000, and they were short 70,000. So there was a person in the community who said, I'll make up the shortfall. Then they recalculated, and they saw they were only short 30,000. Is he supposed to give the 70 that he pledged, or does he only have to give the 30? So Rami Yoshi says he only has to give the 30, because it was made under false pretenses. So from Chaim Kanievsky, and our shaila the same, that even though you have to keep your word, as our Gemara just taught us, it was made under false pretenses that you were told that this great person asked personally that you should contribute, and it's not true, you don't have to keep your pledge.
In our case, it's not false pretenses.
That's why in our place, you have to keep your word. Says the Gemara. Dominei Rav Yemes Sabim Rav Nachman. As we learned in the previous year, we learned in previous year to that also, in the Ksuba, there's the Ksubas Ben Indichrin, which says that the father-in-law is contributing to the Ksuba, but he wants that his grandchildren should get that money and not the other children of the husband. Ask the Gemara. Bamine Rav Yemes Sabim Rav Nachman. Macher Ksubas Labala. We're going to learn, it's a very important concept that we're going to keep on finding in this Masechta. One could sell his Ksuba. A ksuba is a document, it's a receivable, you could sell. Typically, as we'll learn in the Gemara, a ksuba is sold for less than its face value. Why? Because a ksuba is only collectible if the husband divorces or dies before the wife. If the wife dies first, she's not going to collect the ksuba. So a wife could typically sell the ksuba. Obviously, she's going to have to sell it at a discount. Our Gemara discusses such a situation. Macher ksubasa, a woman wants the cash now, so she sells a ksuba to her husband. Yesh la ksubas ben endichrin or en la ksubas ben endichrin? Does the ksubas ben endichrin clause stay active or not? So as Rashi explains the Gemara's question is, how do we view the ksubas ben endichrin clause? Do we view it as part of the ksuba? So if the ksuba became null and void because she sold her ksuba, so does the ksubas ben endichrin clause become null and void? Or does the ksubas ben endichrin remain active even though the ksuba itself was already sold? And sort of a farshim explained the question a little deeper. They asked the following question. Let's say I do a business transaction with you, and in the business transaction that I do with you, I also want a third party to be a beneficiary of this business transaction. In other words, I tell you, I'm selling you something, and when you pay, I'd like you to pay a portion to me and a portion to someone else. I'm allowed to do that. And now I retract on the deal. Am I allowed to retract or not? Do I say that this is really a deal between the two of us? And I could retract. I could be Michael. Or once I name this third party as a beneficiary, I can't do anything that will harm him. How do I have a right to do it? And that's the Gemara's question. How do we look at the children here? Do we look at them as dependent on the mother, and if the mother wants to back out, they'll fall with her, or they become independent beneficiaries, and even if she wants to sell a ksuba, that can't affect them? That's the Gemara Shaila. The Ritva says that certainly if, and it's not really the way we're learning the Gemara, just the Ritva says it, that if certainly if she didn't sell the ksuba at a discount, she got the full value of the ksuba, then the ksuba becomes null and void. Our Gemara is, when she sold it at a discount, will her b'nin dichrin be affected or not? Machr ksubas labala. Yesh lo ksubas b'nin dichrin, ain lo ksubas b'nin dichrin. Amalei Rava. So Rava says, why are you asking in the situation where she sold it? V'tibay le machelis. Why don't you ask about a situation where she came to the husband and she forgave him his requirement to give the ksubas b'nin dichrin? And as Rashi says, why is Mecheles a better question than Mecheres? So Rashi says, for a wife to forgive her husband on the ksuba requirement is typical. She wants to be nice to her husband. But that a woman should start doing business with a ksuba is highly irregular. So why don't the Gemara ask a question about something that's more common? But now the Rishonim ask a different question. We learned, and we'll learn, that a husband and wife cannot remain together if the wife doesn't have a ksuba. So if the wife sold or forgave her ksuba, how could she remain with her husband? So I saw a number of answers with the Rishonim. One answer the Rishonim give is that she did the wrong thing to stay with him. But that doesn't negate the business transaction that she sold or forgave the ksuba. Another teretz is that he died immediately afterwards. So since he died, they're not together, so there's no problem. Another teretz that I saw in the Rishonim is that we know that the ksuba, and we'll discuss this more, Mitzvah Shem, has two parts. There's the monomasayim, which is the principal part of the ksuba, and then the extras. She was maichel, she sold the extras, but not the principal. In fact, I interestingly saw a Rashba. The Rashba says that even though normally one could be maichel, if you owe me money, I could go over to you and say, you know what, I forgive you, you don't have to pay me back. Says the Rashba, since one, a wife forgiving a ksuba is so uncommon and so irregular, the mechila is only effective if it's done in writing. Because otherwise we can't believe that it's true. Says the Gemara.
But the woman sells the ksuba to the young fellow, the ksuba, the husband still has to pay, has to pay from the estate to
but
that.
She's not allowed to be married to him if she doesn't have a ksuba.
Yeah, but we're concerned that the husband's going to divorce the wife.
The caliber like ksuba, says the Gemara. Yesh laksubas v'nen de amalei v'tibar lach mechalas. Why don't you ask about mechalas? Amalei. Hash de mecheres kabaylai. I ask you about mechalas. Dafagav de iklameima. Zuzi ansur. Why would somebody sell a ksuba? Obviously she was strapped for cash. Damina de kamachaloi mei uchla ba'uchla. Somebody who nebuch is reduced to selling a ksuba is like a person who's getting hit with 100 clip. 100 times he's getting hit. Mechelis mebeit, a mechelis, which nobody forced her, certainly, she, if she did it, the ksubas ben dichrin will be forgiven. Amar Rava. So therefore Rava says, pshitali, mecheres ksubas lacherim, if somebody sells a ksuba to an outside party, yesh la ksuba ben dichrin. Her children are still entitled to ben dichrin. My tama, because we say zuzi and sua, she only did it for the cash, but she wasn't looking to hurt her children. And therefore, they're still entitled to ksubas ben dichrin. On the other hand, mecheles ksubas labala, if she went on her own and forgave her ksuba requirement to her husband, and ksubas ben dichrin, her children are certainly not required to have ksubas ben dichrin. My tama, achuli echelta. She certainly forgave him. She wanted to be nice to her husband. She wanted to show how much she cares about him, and she forgave the entire obligation. However, by Rava, she sold it, but she sold it to her husband. How do we view it? Like she sold it to an outsider, and then the ksubas ben dichrin clause is still effective. Or she was like, forgave her husband, and she it's no longer effective. After he answered the question, he answered it. Mecheres ksubas labala, one who sells it to a husband, ka mecheres lacherim dami, and the ksubas ben dichrin is still relevant. Masav Rav Idi Bar Oven, so now Rav Idi Bar Oven asked the following question. We learned the Gemara, we spent a lot of time discussing this Masechta Yevamos. The Gemara Masechta Yevamos says that if a woman's husband is missing, normally we know we need two eidim for everything. We trust one eid to say that her husband died. Mishimiguna kilba rabbonin. Chazal were lenient and we trusted one eid. However, the Mishnah says, let's say based on that one eid's testimony, she goes and gets remarried, and her first husband does show up. So the halacha is that she loses a ksuba from the first husband and from the second husband. The Mishnah continues teaching us Masechta Yevamos that pay Zion. Mesa, when she dies, Ein Yarshin Shalzev, Ein Yarshin Shalzev, neither the Yarshin of the first husband, nor of the husband, a second husband, Yarshin Ksubasa, are entitled to a Ksuba. Davina Baksuba Maivedita. When we learned the Gemara, we asked the question, we just said that she loses a Ksuba. What does the Mishnah mean? That she doesn't get, her children don't get a Ksuba. She lost a Ksuba. Vamra Papa. So the Papa says the Mishnah means ksubas ben dichrin. Her children aren't entitled to the ksubas ben dichrin. Ask the Gemara for my why are they losing the ksubas ben dichrin? Hachanami lema yetzer ansa. We should say that the only reason she married this man, which she shouldn't have, because she should have done better investigation to find out if her first husband is indeed alive or not, is because she was desperate to get married. But why should her children suffer? Just like we said over here, when she's desperate for the money, and that's why she sold the ksuba, we say it shouldn't affect the children. Similarly, we should say over here, if she was anxious to get married, and therefore got married improperly, because her first husband was still really alive, why should her children suffer? So the Gemara, you can't compare. Hasam kas knas with the konsul rabbanim. Chazal gave her a penalty for getting married when she shouldn't. And the penalty means that her entire ksuba rights are gone, even her children, because she did the wrong thing. But we can't compare the case where a woman got married when she shouldn't have to a woman who was strapped for cash and sold the ksuba. And that's why the ksuba from the Dikran is still relevant in that case. Says the Gemara, Yosra Ravim Bachanina, Kamedra of Chizda. Yosra Kamim Shmedra Beloza. Mechelos Ksubas Labala. If a woman goes and she forgives her husband the ksuba. As we know, part of the ksuba requirement is that the husband has to support the wife. And there's a machlok shem how to understand the Gemara. He has to support the wife while they're married, and as we also learned, he has to support her after he dies from his estate. Says the Gemara, if one is meichel ha-ksuba, eilam mezainus, she's not entitled to mezainus. As a machlok shem, what does eilam mezainus mean? Everybody agrees that she waived her right to get supported after he dies. Does Machlekes Rishonim, does Eilam Mezainus also include that she doesn't get supported while he's alive? Machlekes Rishonim. Amalav, so he told him, Eilav the Kamatli Mishmei the Gavir Rabba, I'm not that you reported this in the name of a very important person, have a minalach, I will tell you, Meshav Ra, Tachas Taiva, there's a Pasuk in Mishlei, somebody pays bad for good, like Tomas Rami Beisai. Look at this situation. This wife is so nice to her husband. She's Meichel the Ksuba. It's a tremendous favor. So what does he pay her back? They stop supporting her. How unfair. Yosef Nachem ve'ula v'avim v'rapapi v'yosef chia bar ame gabayu. Also he gavra to shchiva rusasa. There was a man whose arusa passed away. As we know, also something we've learned, the halacha is that if one's wife who's a nesua passes away, the halacha is that he has to take care of her levaya. Here she was only in arusa. So the question was, does the oris have to pay for her levaya? Amalei, zilkfor, go bury her, or have the ksubasa, or pay her estate, the ksuba. Amalei, of chia, tanena, we learned in a braisa, ishta arusa, if one's wife is in arusa, and normally a koyin is not allowed to become tamei. But for seven relatives, he does become Tamei. One of the relatives that he becomes Tamei for is a wife. Says the Braisa, but if she's only his Arusa, not his Nesua, Loi Oinen V'loi Metamelo. He doesn't become an Oinen to her, and he doesn't become Tamei. V'chein he, Loi Anenes V'loi Metames Loi. She doesn't become, if she is married, if they're only an Arus, she doesn't become an Oinen to him, or doesn't become Tamei, or doesn't have to become Tamei. So Rishonim ask a very simple question. We know that the halacha is that even if one is married to a kohen or one is a bas kohen, there's no din of tumah on a bas kohen. So what's the brisa telling me that she doesn't become tamei? She has no is to become tamei. To tell me that the kohen is not allowed to become tamei, that's an important din. But why does it have to tell me that she doesn't become tamei? She's allowed to become tamei to a stranger. So some Rishonim explain that the halacha is, let's say you'll have a husband who's a kohen. And Nasui, he wants to be frum. He doesn't want to be metame to his wife. The halacha is we are forcibly metame him. And the same thing here. Even though she's allowed to become tame, she's allowed to become tame to anyone. But to a husband, we make a wife become tame. Here we won't force her to become tame. That's how some Rishonim explain the Gemara. Others explain it differently. That the Braisa is referring to a yontif. The halacha is chayiv adam latar atzme beregel. A person has to be Torah on Yontif. And therefore, and that's not only men, it's women too. Here, this Arusa's husband died on Yontif. So if she's Mechuyiv to become Tamei, she has to become Tamei. If not, she's not allowed to become Tamei. Just to mention, since we said this halacha, it's interesting, the Behetev points out that the Gemara mentions many times, and we just use it in understanding the Braisa, of Chayiv Odom Latar Atzmi Beregel. A person has to be Torah on Yontif. That then is not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. So the question is, why not? So Berhetiv says two reasons. He says one reason is because Chayiv Odom Latar Atzmi Beregel is because we eat Kabonis, but nowadays we don't have Kabonis. Another reason he says is because part of the Tahara process is the Parah Aduma, and now we don't have the Parah Aduma. However, the Paisk and the Behetiv and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that even though, as we just explained, one cannot really reach the perfect status of Tahara nowadays without the Parah Aduma, there is certainly a halachic preference for somebody to go to the mikveh before Yontif, and the Aruch HaShulchan says the same should be before Shabbos also. So says the Gemara, the continued Hiloya and Sulaimitamala, Mesa, when she dies in a Yarshi, even though normally a husband Yarshin's a wife, here he doesn't. Meshu, Govik Subasa. Tama, the Meshu. Only when he dies is she entitled to the Ksuba. Ha Mesahi, ain't like Ksuba. So we see that there are no requirements. My Tama, Amrav Aisha, she ain't any Kariba, Lechishtanasi L'achel, Titla Mashakasav L'chi. So the way Rashi explained this Gemara is very nicely. What would we think? We would think as follows, that as soon as they become Oros Varusa, there's a Ksuba requirement. So if she dies, so he saves the money that he has to pay for a Ksuba. In return, he has to bury her. Says the Gemara, let's look in the words of the Ksuba. The Ksuba requirement is only Chishtinasi L'acher. After he dies, and she can marry someone else, does the Ksuba requirement come alive? So here she died first. So it was never something that he was obligated and saved. And that's why there is no quid pro quo that he saved the Ksuba and he should have to bury her. Only after Nisuin, where he will yashin her, that's when there's halacha that in exchange for yashining her, he has to bury her. But after the Erisin, he doesn't have to bury her. Kios Rav Amar Reish Lakish, Arusa Shemesa, the halacha is when Arusa dies, ain't like Ksuba. Amalu Abaya, Zeril Amrilei, go tell him, this statement that you just made, Shikulei Tavoschach Shadja Chizri. Take this wonderful statement that you made, and you can throw it on the thorns. Why? Because Kfar Togma Rav Oishia L'shmatz of Abavel, Rav Oishia already told us this halacha, you're not telling us anything we don't know. So we learned that one of the clauses of the Ksuba is Benun Nukvin the Chavil Chaminoi, that any females that will be born to us, my estate will continue supporting after the husband dies. Raftani, so now the question is, until when does the estate have to continue supporting those daughters? So Raftani added to Lachin the Gavrin. Until they get married, the Levi Tani added to Bagrin, until they become Bergeris. So the Gemara assumes that Rav and Levi are disagreeing. Then according to Rav, until she gets married, no matter when. And according to Levi, until she becomes a Begeris, even if she gets married beforehand. Ask the Gemara, LaRav Afagav the Bugger, will Rav hold that a girl's a Begeris? Who we learned so many times in this Masechta, once a girl becomes a Begeris, 12 and a half years old, she's out of the jurisdiction of the father, will Rav suggest that just because she's not married, they still have to continue supporting her? And LaLevi, will Levi suggest, Afagav the Nintziv, that the girl is already married and you still have to support her? Says the Gemara, El Baga V'Loi Intziv, if the girl became Begeris even though she's not married. Or Intziv, if she gets married, V'Loi Bagger, and she didn't become Begeris, there the Kuli Amaloi Pligi, that she, the estate, the brothers, no longer have to support her. He Pligi, what is the Machloikus of Rav and Levi? Belrus V'Loi Bagger. If we have a girl who's not a Begeris, but she didn't become a Nesu, she only became an Arusa. The Chain Tani Levi Masnisi, and that's indeed what we see is Levi's opinion, add to Bagrin, until she becomes a Begeris, V'yanti Zimnei and Dorintzibin. That means, we know that we spoke about this, that typically between Erisin and Nesuin was 12 months. So the Mentor's meaning is when the 12 months are up. Ask the Gemara, Tarti, does it have to be both Begeris and that? El Oy to the Bagrin, or Yimtin Zimnei and Tzibin. Or when she becomes a Begeris, or when a time for marriage comes. And according to Rav, So according to Levi, as soon as she becomes an Arusa, and according to Rav, she has to be an Asua. Ketanai, and actually says this machloikus of Rav and Levi is machloikus tanoim. Because it says in a brisa, at bat say habas nizonis, until when does the state continue supporting the daughters? Achitaurus, until she becomes an Arusa. That's the Tanakama. Mishum Rablaza Omar, Achitibogar, until she becomes a Bogaris. Tanar Rav Yosef, Adahavin. Rav Yosef learned the brisa that says until they get married. But now ask the Gemara, Havaya de Erison, what does Havaya mean? Doesn't mean until she becomes an Arusa. Oy Havaya de Nesuah, doesn't mean she becomes a Nesuah. Answers the Gemara, Teiko, we don't know. So I saw Mepharshim ask a great question. We already know that this is a Machloikis. Doesn't mean Erison and Nesuah. So what is the Gemara adding with this Abaya, with this question, and with this unanswered question? So I saw the Mepharshim answer as follows. We have a Shiloh. Doesn't mean Erison and Nesuah. Here there was a Stam Braisa that says Ada Havaya. Typically, the halacha follows a stam brisa. So if we'll be able to understand what this brisa means, we'll be able to know what the halacha is. But then the Gemara says the brisa is ambiguous. I don't know what it means, and we can't use it to prove either opinion. Amalei Rav Chisda, Rav Yosef, Mishmina Lach Minod Rav Yehuda, Arusa, Yesh La Mezoinis, Ayin La Mezoinis. Rav Yosef asked Rav Yehuda, did you hear anything about an Arusa entitled to Mezoinus to support or not? And as Tosfos explains, didn't we just explain that it's a Machloikas Tanoim? So what's Rav Yosef asking Rav Yehuda? So Tosfos explains that either Rav Yosef was not aware of this Machloikas Tanoim, and therefore he was asking Rav Yehuda his opinion, or Tosfos says, Rav Yosef was aware of the Machloikas, but he wanted to know what is the Halacha. Who do we follow? So again, Nid Shmilach Mined Rav Yehuda. Did you, Rav Chisda asked Rav Yosef, did you hear an opinion from Yehuda? Arusa Yesh Lemezoinus, Ein Lemezoinus, is an Arusa entitled to support or not from the estate? Amale Mishma Shmili. I never heard a definitive ruling. El Mesvara Lesley. My logic tells me that she's not entitled. Why? Kivin de Irsa. Once she's got married, Loi Nichale the Tezel. Her husband, who's her Oris, certainly doesn't want his wife to starve, and therefore the brothers no longer have to support her, because the husband will support her. Says the Noida Behuda, a very bechidish. We're used to understanding, says the Noida Behuda, that the obligation that's contained in the ksuba, that the estate has to support the girls, is an independent obligation, no matter what. That's an obligation that exists in the ksuba. Says in Abi Huda, our Gemara is teaching us a very bechidish. That obligation is only there if they have no other means of support. But if their brothers have a way to be sure that these girls are being taken care of, even though it won't cost them anything, it's fine. And that's why the Gemara is suggesting, since the husband certainly doesn't want his Arusa to starve, and he'll take care of her, the brothers don't have any obligation. Amalei, if you want to follow logic, I could argue just the opposite. Why? He's only an Oris. He recognizes that this marriage may never get consummated. He may find out something about it that will make it into a mekachtos. So he's not going to spend money to someone who's not going to be his wife, and therefore the brothers do have to continue. Ikadamri, others say to Gemara just the opposite. Mishmala Shmili. I never heard an answer. However, Misfar Islay, I think that the brothers do have to support. Why? Kimla Begava. Since the Oris doesn't know for sure that this marriage is going to be consummated, La Shadi Suzi Bhdi. A person's not going to let her, not going to spend money, and this girl may never end up being his wife. Amlay, Imishmala Shmilach, if you didn't hear a definitive ruling, Misfar Leslay, then I could argue that the brothers don't have to support her. Why? Because Kivin the Irsulay Nichle the Titzel. Since she's his Arusa, she certainly doesn't want to see a starve and a helper. So what we have here is a situation that we can't rely on logic, because you could argue it both ways. And like we said before, it's Machloikis Tanom, Rabban and Rebelezer, and it's Machloikis Amaroim, Rav and Levi. We learn, continues the Gemara, Simon the Gavri, Sak, Zarev, Mianov, Yobma, Shnia, Arusa, Vantzah. Says the Gemara, Bominei Mirav Sheshes, Memamenes. We know that Midaraisa, a father has a right to marry off a daughter. Midrabonon, the father has no right to marry off a daughter. Nobody else has that right. But Rabbanan gave the right to the mother and the brothers that she should be able to get married. But those are only Kedusha de Rabbanan. So as we've learned, that those Kedushin could be annulled with Miyun. That before she becomes a Gedayla, she could be Maman and annul the marriage. Ask the Gemara, Baminei Merev Sheshes, Mamanis, Yesh Lamazonis, Ein Lamazonis. A girl got married by her brothers, and then was Maman and her husband. And she now goes back to her family home. Do the brothers have to support her or not? Omer Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes' response, to Nesua, we learned the answer to this in a Braisa. The Braisa says, Amana bebeis aviyo, Amana who is an Amana in her father's home, and Rashi, and we're going to learn the Gemara like Rashi says, this is a woman who was an Arusa, and then her Arus died. Or Grusha bebeis aviyo, or a girl who is a divorcee from Erisin that goes back to her father's home, the Shemeres Yovim Beisavir, or a girl who's a Shemeres Yovim, her husband died, and her Oris died, and she's waiting for Yibum from his brother, Daloch is Yesh LeMezoinus. Now she returns to her family home as entitled to support. Hudaimer, Oida Beisavir, while she's by her father's home, Yesh LeMezoinus. Ainem Beisavir, when she's not in her father's home, Ain LeMezoinus. As to Gemara, what's the machlokes? Rabbi Yehuda, Ayna Tana Kama, they're saying the identical thing. El Alav, says the Gemara, Mememenes Ikebenayu. The machlokes here is a Mememenes entitled to support or not? Tana Kama says yes, Rabbi Yehuda holds no. The Tana Kama sover Isla, she is entitled, Rabbi Yehuda sover Lesla, she's not entitled. Ask the Gemara another shayla. Bairish Lokesh Bas Yivama. And again, there's a number of approaches in the Rishonim, as Tosfos tells us, how to understand this Gemara. We know that if a Yavam marries his Yavama, we learned the Gemara Masechet Ksubis, Masechet Yavamis, that the Ksuba of the new husband doesn't have to write a Ksuba. Rather, the halacha is that her Ksuba, the Ksuba from the first husband, is assumed by the second husband. On the other hand, we also learned in the Gemara Masechta Yevamos that let's say the first husband didn't leave any assets, then the second husband does have to write a new ksuba. So now ask the Gemara. By Rish Lakish. And again, this is the way most Rishonim learn the Gemara. Bas Yevam Yesh Lamazonis and Lamazonis. We have a situation where the first husband died. He did leave over assets. So the ksuba obligation is on the first husband. Now this new couple get married, the wife of the first brother gets married to a brother, and they have a daughter. So the shaila is, who has the obligation of support? From the first estate or from the second estate? Bas Yivama, Yesh Lamazonis, Ein Lamazonis. Kivan Damamar, since we just quoted the Gemara Masechta Yivama says, Ksubasa al Nichsei Bala Harishin, that the Ksub obligation from the Yivama goes from the first estate, Leslo, so the second husband doesn't have to pay for it. Oidilma, Kivan the Lesla Marishan, since, as we also quoted the Gemara Masechta Yevama says, that if the first the husband didn't leave over anything, then Tekinul Rabbanu Mesheni, Chazal say that the second husband does have to play Ksuba, so therefore, that could be an argument that the second husband does have to, the state does have to support these girls, this girl, Isla. And the Gemara says, Teiku, we don't have a way of answering the Shaila. It's interesting to note, the Rishonim discuss a number of issues. One issue is like this. We're having a conversation. The Gemara discussed, does the estate have to pay the support, the second estate, does the Yavim's estate have to pay the support for the girl? But as we started today's shiur, we also discussed that a father has to give a daughter a dowry. So now this girl, who was born to the second man, but it's a continuation of the first marriage, does he have to give a dowry? Or again, do we say that the dowry comes from the first estate? So the Rishonim say, that's no question. Since he's her real father, and as we started today's shiur, a real father is obligated to give his daughter a dowry, there is no shaila that Nadin comes from the real father, from the Yavam. Then there's another shaila. What about a ksubas penin dichrin? What's the halacha on the ksubas penin dichrin clause? Here the Rishonim say that the ksubas penin dichrin is on the second, and they also say, We also say that one of the clauses of the ksuba is that the wife, after the husband dies, will be supported from the estate. Is the shaila that we have about the daughters also going to be a shaila on the wife? And here the Rishonim certainly say that once this woman married the Yavam, and he becomes obligated, and if he passes away, his estate has to continue supporting the Yavamah.